Among the feelings of change all around us, I think there's been a hint of a new openness and candor regarding race in America. The political campaign shows that people are tired of simplistic rhetoric, that's for sure. Support the police versus police brutality is all racism. There is a recognition that the violence resulting in the deaths of Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Akai Gurley, Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Freddie Gray is reflected in tensions unspoken, anger unvoiced, privilege unacknowledged, freedom and equality still out of reach for Americans. Is there a role that each of us can play in speaking of those tensions, angers, privileges, speaking openly, speaking one race to another, one person to another, to step over suspicion and awkwardness to find some new place? We think so. And over the next several weeks, we plan to bring you straightforward, candid, sometimes painful one-on-one conversations about race. We're inspired by a project from writer Rebecca Carroll. It's a series called How I Got Over. We'll be hearing some of her conversations here on The Takeaway. Her first is with actor Ethan Hawke, and we'll hear that next week. But Rebecca's mantra is, let's just start talking. And so we did. We found out a lot about each other as we stepped through some awkward territory to find truth and a new understanding. Two people at a time.
Well, so the series is really largely inspired by a Toni Morrison quote, which is that we die. That may be the meaning of life, but we do language, and that may be the measure of our lives. And I really do believe that. And this conversation that we keep talking about, the difficult conversation about race, has always been important. But why it's particularly important now is that there is a window of heightened receptivity. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's just a trend or some kind of Gladwellian tipping point, we need to take that moment, that window, and really get in there and really move beyond the uncomfortable. Because I don't really think most white people certainly understand just how uncomfortable we need to get. It's sort of like, get uncomfortable, sit in that discomfort, and then keep talking. And I think that that's really the challenge.
What should I do about my white privilege? Period, the end.
Okay. So rather that's maybe not the question to ask, but because you have it and you've been operating in the world with it, right? You're not going to give it away. There's nothing – you have it.
I'm a guy in a wheelchair. I'm not supposed to have any privilege, but I still have it anyway.
That's
right. So it's like white trumps wheelchair.
White trumps everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious, though, as a father and you know, somebody who is clearly knowledgeable – on the issue of race. I mean, how do you talk to your kids? How do you talk to your peers? How do you talk at dinner parties? How do you have those conversations with your children who you hope will be citizens who care about these things, but not in a way that puts their privilege before their consciousness?
My children, here's what happens. My children come to me and they go, why are we just white? And I say, what are you talking about? And they go, We have no story. We're just here, and we're the bad guys. And how did that happen? And how did that? Oh, it's endless. And I go, you're right, you're right, and we are the bad guys. And in fact, if there was a way to undo the bad guy thing, I would love to do it. But I think these are really important.
No question. You know, I was adopted into a white family, and I was raised in a white town, and was the only black student for most of my schooling, almost all of my schooling, in fact. And I sort of, you know, I've strung together this livelihood and career based almost entirely on inquiry and conversation, particularly around race, as I began experiencing and witnessing and being the target of racism, you know, very, very early on, and having nobody to help sort of guide me through that. And I knew that the only way that I would be able to understand it and survive it would be to have conversations and ask questions, and that would bring me all the way through. I was only presented with a white default, and I knew that that would not serve me, and I knew that that might even act, you know, against me.
What do you mean a white default?
Everything around me, my family, my school, my town. Everything was white. Everything on TV almost, except, you know, The Cosby Show and Oprah and, you know, Garrett, whoever.
Morris.
On Saturday Night Live. But, you know, in terms of friends and teachers and, I mean.
Who didn't help you? Who could have?
Oh, my parents, for sure.
Really?
Oh, for sure. You know, they were and are extraordinary people, artists, intellectuals, who were always sort of on the kind of lax or side of parenting. Very, you know, my dad liked to think of the five of us as pre-Garibaldi Italy, you know, like we were all sort of like independent nation states, you know, but connected and loosely, you know.
You were Naples.
I don't know who I was, but I really could have used the guidance. It was further complicated by the fact that I had a relationship with my white birth mother, who really was only interested in loving the part of me that she created, which was the white part, and really erased the black part. And then even further complicated by wanting to find my black birth father, who was demonized by my white birth mother and broken by the system when I did finally find him. So there were a lot of factors involved. But what I did know that was that I would have to talk my way through it, not talk my way out of it, but talk my way through it with a kind of persistent, you know, vulnerable and also really ambitious approach.
Can we connect some of these discussions to actual political change? For instance, can we connect a discussion about the incarceration rate to concrete changes that will reduce the population at Rikers? Can we turn a conversation about segregated New York into a, what would we do to make it less segregated?
I mean, these are questions of every age, of every era. I don't have a ton of hope all the time, but that is the one place where I really enlist whatever hope I have left. You know, it's like what Julian Bond said to me when he was still alive. You know, the struggle is long. You know, and we just have to forge onward, and we have to hope that these conversations will lead to some kind of political change.
I sometimes think the abstract notion of equality kills us, because sometimes things can meet the test of equal opportunity, but the outcomes are so obviously unequal that we're not solving the problem that we want to solve.
Yeah, and it's also very much about, you know, I think of that situation when Hillary Clinton talked with the young folks of Black Lives Matter earlier on in her campaign, and she said, "You're not going to change hearts and minds." I feel like that's all we kind of have, you know, because clearly we've tried all measure of policies, and yes, ultimately that is how we live in this country, by legislature and policy. But race and racism and white supremacy and structural systemic racism is as much policy as it is people's hearts and minds. So for me, my approach is hearts and minds through dialogue.
Rebecca Carroll is editor for special projects here at WNYC, and she's helping us launch a series of conversations over the next several months trying to tackle honest and difficult discussions about race. Next week, we'll bring you her first conversation in the series with actor Ethan Hawke.
I was at the Oscars sitting next to Denzel Washington when he won the Oscar, right? And Halle Berry also won that year. And there was a great feeling. Sidney Poitier was being honored there that night. And Denzel got up and said, "You know, I'm following you my whole life." And it was very kind of beautiful. And it really felt like, to me, in the room, that isn't it great that all that stuff is behind us?
Ethan Hawke on race in Hollywood and in his personal life. That's next week in our series, Uncomfortable Truths, Confronting Racism in America. Rebecca Carroll is also hosting a series of events in WNYC's Green Space on Friday, November 18th. Kristen Davis from Sex and the City will join Rebecca for a conversation about interracial adoption. For tickets, visit WNYC.org/thegreenspace. That's GREENE.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.